visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Financial technology, or fintech, is one of the fastest-growing industries in the world today, with New York, London, Tel Aviv, Edinburgh, Singapore, Moscow, and other major cities all vying for a piece of the action. Welcome to Breaking Banks, the first dedicated radio show that focuses on how this new boom is changing everything, from the way we bank to the very concept of money itself. Now, here's your host, Brett King.
Welcome to Breaking Banks. We are the first global fintech podcast and radio show. This is your host, Brett King. And welcome to 2017, our first show for the year. Yay, Happy New Year. So we've got a few announcements to get out of the way, and then we've got some really good stuff. We've got Robert Scoble and Shel Israel joining the show today to talk about their new book, The Fourth Transformation. But also wanted to cover off some of the big things that happened last year in fintech and some of the stuff that's going to happen this year. Now, before we get into the show, a few conference announcements. Next Money is hosting the FinTech Finals, FF17, in Hong Kong. It's on January 18 and 19th. There's going to be startups from all around Asia at that event. It's Asia's biggest FinTech showcase, and several of the Breaking Banks hosts will be there. You'll have Rob Finlay there, JP Nichols, myself, Jim Morales. We'll all be there talking at FF17. You can check it out at ff17.nextmoney.org. It's part of the HK Invest, or Hong Kong government's Start Me Up HK Festival. Now, March, I'm going to be down at the Temenos Innovation Jam in Miami. So you can go to temenos.com and check out events for their innovation jams and join us down in Miami in March. LendIt USA 2017, the biggest conference in fintech lending, will be in New York City at the Javits Center in New York on March 7th and 8th. You can use the codes Breaking Banks and you'll be able to save an additional 15%. Off the registration fee. And on April 10th and 11th, Chris Skinner and I will be at Innovate Finance at the Global Summit in London, April 10th and 11th, and it's at the Guildhall. So we'll be tweeting out registration information and putting that on our website for you guys to catch us there. Be great to be working with Chris again at an event. Now, we had a huge year last year. The CEO of NASDAQ, Adena Friedman, said, we are a global fintech company. Everybody wants to be a fintech company these days because fintech is hot. Now, to put this in perspective, PwC is estimating that fintech investment will exceed US $150 billion over the next 3 to 5 years. But to sort of give you an idea of how much investment's gone into fintech already, there's approximately, by some estimates, 14,000 fintech companies around the world. Of those that have reached unicorn status, that is companies who are worth more than $1 billion by valuation, there's at least 80 of those already in the world. Now, if you look at investment just since 2010, we've seen $60 billion of investment in fintech startups occur just in the last 6 years. Now, that's significant because it's about the same amount that the U.S. banks have spent on digital transformation over the same period. So you've got, 6,000 banks and 5,000 credit unions in the United States all spending on technology transformation, and about the same amount as that's been spent on digital transformation has been invested in fintechs around the world. Now, if you're not sure about how this investment is playing out, if you think fintech isn't making an impact, earlier in the week, I wrote a blog on some of the biggest fintechs in the world. And in China, the top 6 or 8 unicorns that you have there, they are valued collectively at somewhere around $95 billion in terms of valuation. And that's 3 times what the top unicorns or fintechs in the U.S. are valued at. And that includes Square and, the ilk of those, the sort of unicorns in the U.S. space, Stripe and others. But that's significant because China is really leading the world in terms of fintech. Now, Alipay itself, some of the stats for Alipay, they took a $4.5 billion investment in September at a $60.5 billion valuation. Now, that's significant because Uber's last fundraising was at $68 billion. So Alipay is pretty similar, you know, give or take a few billion, in terms of the valuation of Uber, which everyone knows Uber, huge company, growing at an incredible rate. But Alipay, well, they're making a lot more money than Uber is apparently. Now, Uber is now the world's largest payments network in the world. They beat out PayPal for that honor, I think it was about a year ago. But to put it in perspective in terms of their transaction volume, at peak transaction volume, Ant Financial, the parent company for Alipay or Alipay's network, is processing 97,000 transactions per second. Visa's peak, about 7,000 or 8,000. Yeah, so we're talking significantly larger organization than Visa in terms of its payments capability. But what they did with that payments capability and Alibaba's platform is they leveraged that for deposits. And so in the last 12 months, their mobile money market fund, Yuebao, has managed assets under management of $96 billion. Now, WeChat, Tencent's competing network in China, saw all this deposit-taking activity and said, we've got to get in on that action. So they launched their own deposit fund. And the first day, they took in $130 million in deposits. What all of this means is that now 20% of the deposit market in China is owned by these technology companies. We talk about FANG, the FANG stocks in the US, Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, Google. But in China, it's all about BAT, Baidu, Alibaba, Tencent. So between Alibaba and Tencent, so WeChat and Alipay are those platforms, they now own 70% of the mobile payments market. And it was $500 billion of mobile payments that were processed last year. And they've taken 20% of the deposit market from the big banks. In doing so, this has meant a 40% increase in costs for the local Chinese banks in handling deposit risk. This is a material change to the way banking works. Now, if you look at Ant Financial today, you'll see nothing that looks like a traditional bank. We've really gone back to first principles with Alipay. They've looked at the simple problem of what is the major utility a bank should provide? And they've come up with three products or three pieces of utility. The ability to pay, the ability to have a value store to store your money safely, maybe make some return on it, and access to credit when you need it. And those are the three businesses that Ant Financial has. A credit business for businesses on the Alibaba platform, a deposit business for people who run cash through their Alipay bank account on their phone, and a phenomenal payments network that handles 97,000 transactions per second. But if you think that's big, keep in mind Visa is today, their market cap is about $180 billion. So Ant Financial is processing something like 700% of the volume of transactions that Visa has, and they're valued at $60 billion. And they take deposits. Visa doesn't take deposits. And they offer credit. Visa doesn't offer credit. They're just a network. So realistically, Ant Financial is probably a $500 billion company, and it's a fintech. And that would make it twice as valuable as the largest bank in the world. And it's not a bank. It's a technology company. That's what fintech is doing to the world. So if you don't get it yet, if you don't get it that fintech is changing the way we think about banking, then I'm sorry, you will soon. Anyway, I thought I'd start with some of that amazing stuff about Ant Financial. It's huge. Obviously, there's a lot of stuff happening in the neo-banking space as well. Moovin, you guys know, I'm the CEO and founder of Moovin. We had a huge end of year quarter, we did this massive commercial deal. I can't talk about it in detail yet, but the commercial deals we did with MoveIn at the end of 2016 will fund us for the next couple of years. And probably, I think we'll hit somewhere in sort of the range of about $20 million in revenue next year. But what's interesting is we've become a neobank and a software provider, bank as a platform provider now, which is, I don't know of any other neobank in the world that sort of has that, except maybe Fedor. So you don't get many banks these days that are also software companies. So fintech allows you to have some pretty interesting non-traditional business models as well. The podcast, I want to thank you guys for your enormous support of the podcast. It has been absolutely huge year for us. We more than tripled our listenership. We are now doing, you know, in any single month, we're doing 300,000 or 400,000 listeners in a month. September and October were our biggest months this year. Absolutely huge, as Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump would say. Huge, 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 says Rachel in the background. So it was huge for us. So thank you guys for keeping us as the number one podcast on fintech in the world. As we did our 175th show last year. It's been huge. We've been at it for 3.5 years. No sign of slowing down anytime yet. We've expanded the hosting team, and the guests just keep getting better and better. And this year, some of the guests we've got for you, we're actually out at Vegas this week doing CES, so we're going to have a phenomenal show from the CES interviews, talking about some of the tech out there. So we are really trying to find that divide between tech and fin. But that sort of brings me to getting to introduce Robert Scoble, who's our author who's coming on the show today doing his launch of The Fourth Transformation. But before we get to that, you guys might have had a chance, if you haven't, I would ask you to have a consideration of the new book I wrote in the summer last year, Augmented, Life in the Smart Lane. And as part of that, I looked at the major disruptive forces that would change the way we live over the next 20 years. I picked four major disruptions. The first of those is a fairly obvious one, artificial intelligence, and embedded in that, robotics and the use of machine intelligence. In fact, you can sort of break AI in terms of its progression into three stages. We have right now machine intelligence or task-specific AI, so a self-driving car, or a drone that will deliver a pizza. These are task-specific artificial intelligence. Or IBM Watson diagnosing cancer. Now, that doesn't mean that those artificial intelligences can mimic a human or speak to you in a conversational manner like Samantha, the AI on the movie Her. We don't have artificial general intelligence yet, and we may not for another decade or so, according to Kurzweil. It's going to be 2021, something like that. But let's say it's 10 years away. The next stage after that is when AIs become more intelligent than humans. We have super intelligent AI, and that could be a couple of decades away. But in the meantime, we do have machines that are smarter and better at doing things than humans. Diagnosing cancer, driving a vehicle. You might contest that, but you're going to start seeing data on this that shows that autonomous vehicles will very, very quickly outperform humans. I'm going to see that. And on a range of other activities. We're going to see it in financial services. We're going to see AIs better at giving investment advice than humans. If you doubt that, remember this conversation. We'll have it again in a few years when we talk about AIs or robo-advisors outperforming humans. So that's the number one disruptor, artificial intelligence and robotics. And this is going to be responsible for a job loss automation in economies like the United States. Of 40 to 50% of jobs will be impacted by automation, either partially or fully. And in markets like China, it could be as high as 75, 80%. Of jobs affected by automation and algorithms. Huge impact, and it's going to change the way we think about the world. So that's the number one disruptor. Number two is how technology becomes embedded in the world around us. So embedded technology experiences. Everything from what we're going to talk about with Scoble and Shell in a moment, VR, AR, mixed reality, glasses and this sort of technology. Voice user interface such as Alexa and smart assistants that will conduct commerce on our behalf or manage our home, manage our car, manage our bank account, and provide us with advice. And basically sensors all around that can measure everything that's happening and act in real time. Number three, health tech and gene editing. Fourth, we combine all of these technologies into a new smart world. And this smart world is made up of smart companies, smart economies, smart systems, smart ecosystems, smart value chains. And one of the biggest changes in smart cities and smart economies of the future will be energy. And right now we're seeing a massive shift in the way we think about energy. Solar energy contracts around the world are already being written at 2 cents per kilowatt hour. The average price of generating coal-based electricity in the United States is 6 cents per kilowatt hour. We already have solar energy generation at a third of the cost of what it is in the US today. But here's the thing. Applying Moore's law to solar cells, photovoltaic cells, means that in 10 years, solar will be one-tenth of the price that it is today. So you'll be paying 0.2 of a cent per kilowatt hour. Now, coal can't get cheaper, because the cost of pulling coal out of the ground and the price of that, okay, commodities market could tank, but it's not going to change that much. Oil price is not going to change that much. Technology is going to transform energy. Now, any government that's invested heavily in coal plants will be in massive trouble in 10 years' time, because they'll be paying something like 50 times the price for energy that competing economies who've invested in solar and renewable will be. So these are the big four disruptors I picked. Now, of these, we're going to drill right down in with Robert and Shell. We're going to drill right into day-to-day experiences using what they think in 10 years' time will be the dominant technology that we will use personally. Today, it's the smartphone. But in 10 years, Shell and Robert predict that's going to be a different device. So we're going to have a short break, and we'll be right back with our interview with Robert Scoble and Shell Israel on their new book, The Fourth Transformation.
What do financial services of the future look like? Invisible yet ubiquitous, blended into our lives like air, gravity, this podcast. Temenos has specialized for 20 years in creating the best financial technology for thousands of financial institutions worldwide. Our open fintech marketplace allows millions of people to experience money in exciting new ways. Join the most vibrant financial services ecosystem in the world. Temenos, we make the money go round.
Listening to Breaking Banks featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag Breaking Banks. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks. This week I have my good friends Robert Scoble and Shell Israel back on the show with us. Robert and Shell, welcome back to Breaking Banks.
Thanks, hi, Brett. It's good to be back.
That was Shell, and I'm Robert.
Now, I first of all want to apologize to you guys, because this is the second time we've had to do this due to technical difficulties, but it's great to have you guys back on. So let me...
Hey. Sometime I'll tell you about how I was interviewing Bill Gates on a live Nokia phone, and the audio went away halfway in between in there. So it happens.
It does. So let's just jump straight into how you guys are going with the book launch of The Fourth Transformation. Tell us about how that's going.
Shell, you want to start?
Yeah, it's going better than any book. I've done 6 previous books and 2 others with Robert. This is the first time we've ever been number one at anything, and we ran 3 days running number one in Kindle for computers and technology. Our sales are going well ahead of last year, And people like you keep inviting us to come and speak on the radio and on video.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's because this is hot stuff.
What's really going on, Brad, is that augmented reality is going to be the story of 2017. And we have the only book in the market that really explains what's coming and what's already underway. So
let's talk about that more broadly. We've had Oculus Rift out. You know, you've got the Sony PlayStation headset, the HTC Vive, and so forth. You know, in terms of sort of Christmas buying and things like that, what do you think it will be the result for VR generally?
I think VR is still in its really, really early days, and it's still too nerdy and too expensive. So I don't expect the average consumer to have bought one this year. But that is going to radically change over the next 12 months because this stuff is radically fun. If you're watching my kids play in VR or in augmented reality with like the Microsoft HoloLens or what we call mixed reality, these things are stunning, and when people come over and play them, they're blown away. So I know that the fundamental product is there, and I know that it's going to keep growing and growing at a pretty good rate. But this Christmas, you know, to buy an HTC Vive, you need $800 for the headset and the controllers, and you need somewhere around a $1,000 PC. If you go really cheap, maybe $500, but you need a PC with a GPU card in it. A PC that's designed for gaming, basically, and the ones I'm standing at Upload VR right now, which is a media company that covers this space, and we have 1080 cards from NVIDIA in our PCs, and those are $600 a piece. So you're talking about $1,500 for a PC plus $800 for the headset, plus most of the experiences cost money. You know, you can download a lot of things for free, but you know, you start playing super hot and costs you $30, right?
Yeah.
So now if you buy 10 or 15 different experiences, which you will in VR because even the most fun thing is boring after a while and you want to move on to something else, right?
Yeah.
And all of that is coming to mobile phones by the end of 2017. You know, particularly from Apple, I think Apple's going to be the big story of 2017.
So I want to get to that in a little while.
With a mixed reality iPhone.
I want to get to that in a while because we need to dive into that in some detail. But before I do that, for those of our listeners on the AM band who maybe don't know what the difference is between VR, AR, and mixed reality, can you explain the differences between these?
Mixed reality is next generation augmented reality. So we've been seeing, you know, you've seen augmented reality on Snapchat when you aim the camera at your face and you can get a barfing rainbow coming out of your mouth, and you see it on the Sephora app.
You love the whole barfing rainbow makeup thing, right?
Oh, you know, absolutely. But that's augmented reality, right? It's putting something virtual on top of something real, i.e. your face. That's augmented reality. But the next generation augmented reality devices like the Microsoft HoloLens sense where you are, where the room is that you're in, and put stuff on top of the room that you're in. That's mind blowing. And that I call it next generation augmented reality, and Microsoft is calling it, and others are calling it mixed reality, because at some level you can't tell what's virtual anymore and what's real. And you're going to soon get virtualized interfaces to real physical things. So the world is going to start melding together. You know, you're going to run an Internet of Things device, maybe a manufacturing line, and you're going to see the data from all the sensors on top of the device, and you're going to be able to control it with your hand. So that's what you mean by mixed reality, that it's really mixing.
Right. So mixing the digital and the physical virtually.
A couple of comments, Brett. One is, anytime we have a transformation or just the old-fashioned paradigm shift in technology, there are enough technical words to make the average person eyes glazed over, but over time it becomes just stuff. There was a time when drivers of cars needed to know the principles of torque. Now we can't even spell it. For mixed reality, I think the simplest way of saying it, or the way I try with everyday people I know, is to say when augmented reality gets so good that visually you can't tell, and probably with audio too, you can't tell truth from illusion, that's mixed reality, and that's where all of this stuff is going.
Yeah. There's one of the companies here at Upload is building an augmented reality system for PACCAR, the big trucking company. And they put a virtual 18-wheel truck in our office.
Wow.
And you can walk around this truck with your HoloLens glass on, and you can change the headlights, and you can see what you know, if you wanted to buy a truck, you could see what it would look like when you customize the hood or put a different engine on it or put a different set of lights on it. And they can show you all sorts of stuff on top of that truck, like what's the aerodynamic principles that got changed when you change the hood on it, and how much will that cost you in extra gas per year, right?
That's pretty cool.
All sorts of stuff is happening like this. It's happening in surgery rooms. It's happening in retail stores. It's happening at sporting events soon, because these glasses are coming to consumers, and they haven't yet gotten there, but they're soon. In the next 2 to 3 years, I believe the first really good products are going to unleash for consumers because the price is coming down and the size is coming down.
And that truck is not consumer, but what's interesting is, I've got his name, the guy that showed it to us at Upload. He said that the gas savings in 6 months from using this augmented reality that we were looking at would allow this company to go from number two in the trucking industry to number one, bypassing the current leader. And that's a simple little application, other than when you put on the HoloLens and I think it was Robert said, look to your right, Shell. And I looked over and I was standing about 2 inches in front of the huge grill of this monster truck coming at me. That was pretty exciting.
Yeah.
And I was really glad the truck wasn't moving forward.
But for consumers, what it does, what the HoloLens does, there's four sensors on the front of it that actually make a 3D map of the room you're standing in front of.
Right.
And there's a game where aliens dig through your wall. In other words, it knows where your actual physical wall is, and it does a visual effect to make it look like an alien is coming through the wall, and then you have to shoot it with your hands.
Yep.
And everybody I let play this is blown away and really gets into it. And that's what's coming. It's just right now the HoloLens is too heavy to wear. It's too expensive. It's too nerdy. And nobody knows why you need it. But that's going to change over the next 12 months as a number of companies come out with products that explain why this matters to people.
Now, you identify this shift as the fourth transformation. So can you guys explain, maybe Shell, you want to start with this? What is the fourth
Shell, you want to go first or I want?
Yeah, I'll take that one. And don't miss your cue this time, Robert. The book begins with a very authoritarian phrase, in the beginning. After that, we divert into our own story. In the
Some
beginning,
other books have started like that, I believe.
Yeah, but it kind of escapes me. We'll claim it as our own because we see no copyrights on it.
Okay. On the Bible, but, you mean?
Yeah,
well, it's in, the Bible of AR.
Okay, let's stay out of that holy stuff for a while. You know, in the coming year, we may get into other altercations on that one. But in the beginning, there are mainframes, and there are a bunch of computer scientists, a small bunch of computer scientists and engineers in the bellies of in the basements of large corporations, and they punched holes in cards, and then they talked to digital machines. The first transformation moved from those mainframes to desktops, We're now knowledge workers, again in professional places everywhere, could now use text with DOS and CPM and other programming, simple programming languages to interact. And now a whole lot more people could use it. And the world was transformed because computing was coming into business usage. Then the third transformation, am I counting right? Or no, the second transformation came about 10 years later. And we look at the introduction of the Mac in 1984. Now you could do things by pointing and clicking at little pictures on your screen. This enabled computing to move, digital devices to move from the knowledge worker to everybody. And this was really cool. And this is where millions and millions of people came into it. 10 years later, again, Apple came out with something called the iPhone. And now everybody could use their digital devices everywhere. And that's where we're up to. And that is the center of our digital lives right now. But wait, there's more. And wait, Robert, you can take it from here.
Go ahead, Robert.
Robert?
Yep, sorry about that. I lost you there for a second.
That's okay. So continue on the fourth
transformation. That's another religious reference, isn't it? I was lost, but now I'm found. Oh, there we go again.
Yeah. So, okay. Joel, are you finished yet?
I'm finished. Yeah. I turned it over. You missed your cue again, so I'll take it again. Now comes the fourth transformation, Robert.
Yeah, and what these transformations really are new user interfaces. And every time the industry changes its user interface, big companies go away, right? When we went from character mode on DOS or on the Apple II to GUIs on the Macintosh or on Windows, Borland and WordPerfect bet on the old user interface and they went away. And when we went to touch, Nokia and BlackBerry bet on the old user interface and they went away.
Yeah.
And this is a new user interface. The user interface is laid on top of the world. And we're already seeing many devices that we write about in the book that do this. Daiquiri is a good example. You walk around an oil factory and you see it. You see the interface on top of the real world. And this is a really deep shift for the technology industry. Because
just to explain to listeners who don't know, Daiquiri is a hard hat with augmented reality glasses on it.
Right.
And it's used for people who are on utility poles or oil rigs where they really need to keep their heads up while they're doing their work.
Yeah.
And so when you're walking around an oil refinery, there's pumps, sensors in it. There's other devices that can, valves and things that you can control. And now you can walk around those pipes and see the data coming off the pipe. So if there's something wrong, you can see exactly what sensor is causing the problem or what pump is causing the problem and fix it. And that's great for an enterprise. But this is coming to consumers within the next 2 years for the first time. And that's when you're going to see a real shift in the industry, a shift that Shell and I predicted is going to play out for decades.
So
right?
This is
when the Apple II came out, people thought it wasn't that important, but it kicked off $1 trillion industry that continues to improve to today. And that's absolutely going to be true of this technology.
It's our prediction, and Robert and I fluctuate on years, and we probably will continue to do it. But right now, we walk around with our heads bent over into a screen in our hands. And in 10 years, we will be the majority of the developed world will move from the center of our lives being that headset into headsets. And that's in the book what we call walking upright.
Right.
When we look forward,
and you refer to them as HMDs, right?
I had trouble hearing you.
You refer to these mixed reality glasses as HMDs, right?
Head-mounted devices, right. Yes.
Or head-mounted displays.
Right.
Either way... 10 years from today, they're going to look like the glasses that you and I wear, Brett. There may be a little device the size of a cell phone in your pocket that's got certain important pieces like the GPU, the CPU, Wi-Fi, battery. But essentially, we're going to have devices in front of us that do everything that a phone does and then orders of magnitude more stuff. We're going to do a lot of what we do with phones by tapping and touching and sliding. We're going to do it by simply moving our eyes around, and that will make objects work.
When you and I start using typing, your fingers.
So I want to talk about that.
And using your voice.
And gestures and right. voice. But our eyes will do a great deal. You and I, according to the founder of iFluence, a company recently bought by Google, we'll be writing our next books by typing on a keyboard in midair with our eyes, and it will be about 9 times faster than you and I type. And I don't know if this will come to pass, but it's a direction the technology is heading that gives people an idea of how transformative it is. And I finally got to stick in the word transformative about a book called Transformation. Yeah.
So iFluence and this eye tracking capability that you speak of is one of the foundations of the new forms of input that will be enabled by wearing these mixed reality glasses. But sorry, go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, eye sensors bring 3 things to the table, not just input. It brings control of a user interface that is in a new kind of interface, because we're getting artificial intelligence is the second part of this book. And when you use one of these devices, it's going to see all the objects in the room you're in and segment them out, first of all, and then start doing artificial intelligence lookup. So right now I'm looking at a table with a tape measure on it, and a bow and a drink. All of that is going to be... The machines are going to be looking that up while you're looking at it with your eyes, and that's going to enable a new kind of user interface. And we're starting to get tastes of this with apps like Blipr, which is also in the book, which lets you aim your phone at a Coke can or a cereal box and see augmented stuff coming off of that, like a search engine and like models that are like monsters coming out of your cereal box, right, if you want that.
Right. Now, it enables you
to use technology in cases where right now it's dangerous to. Right now, texting while driving can be a deadly mistake. But in the future, augmented reality will be embedded in the near future, will be embedded in your windshield, or you'll be wearing glasses. There are all sorts of ways that we will be able to do stuff. Going back to Daiquiri, if you're on an oil rig and you're making a repair that a little mistake might blow up the oil rig, it's really good to keep your hands free to do the things you need to do while your eyes give you the information that the old lineman might have had to look at on a piece of paper on a clipboard.
Yeah.
It's much safer, it's much faster, and
well,
it's
this
much
is this
accurate.
Is why we designed head-up displays for fighter aircraft, because when you're having to look at threat analysis and all this stuff, and you look down, you tend to crash.
Guess who funded this whole series of things? It's the military.
Yeah.
The fighter jet pilots in an F-35 fighter jet already are wearing augmented reality glasses, and they don't see the plane anymore. They see the battlefield underneath where they're sitting. And so they can see where the enemy is, and they can make strategic decisions in conjunction with artificial intelligence. But back to the eye sensor, because it gives you 3 things. One is the user interface. 2, it's giving you a new kind of biometrics identity, because it's looking at your eyes, and your eyes are a fingerprint. So it knows that Shell is wearing his glasses, not me. And if Shell hands me his glasses, I won't see his personal data, because it knows Shell is no longer wearing those glasses, and it's going to put me into guest mode, or it's going to sense that Robert Scoble's wearing these glasses, and all of a sudden they'll become Robert Scoble's glasses, and I'll see my personal data and my personal screens. It also gives you a new kind of compression called foveated rendering.
This gives you much faster
frame rates, which is really important for the small GPUs that are on mobile devices like glasses and phones.
Well, this is a new thing. I haven't heard you talk about this before, so it's interesting. Now,
Me neither.
So this is, he had a meeting yesterday, Shell, and he learned this new term, and he's laying it out for a run today. But the other thing
I can't pronounce it, and Robert probably can already spell it. So that's an example of how we work, because he's always ahead of me.
And, well, I believe that we have a company called Fove inside this book, and Fove is doing this new kind of foveated rendering already to increase frame rates and increase resolutions. Right?
Robert, so, I don't recall that company in our book, but
I thought it was, but I've written about so many things in Ogni.
I know
they're all floating around, right?
So let me ask you about the other technology.
I completely lost the point I was trying for, so let's try it.
Let me ask you about the other technology that's going to underpin mixed reality glasses, which is the 3D sensors. You speak about PrimeSense and other technologies. Tell us about why that's you talked about HoloLens experience earlier, but how's this going to be useful in the sort of day-to-day implementation of mixed reality glasses?
Yeah, and by the way, you don't even necessarily need a 3D sensor. I saw a startup a couple weeks ago at a Web Summit that uses a standard iPhone camera and makes a 3D map of the room you're looking at or the world you're looking at. When you get a 3D map of your room, now you can overlay virtual things on top of your room. And that's really the first thing. You can also do really accurate measurements of your room. So if you're trying to put a virtual couch in to see, does this new couch from Nordstrom or from Macy's fit into my living space, all I have to do is use the next iPhone and I'll be able to virtually put it there and see if it will fit. And if it will fit in the decor of my room as well, because it'll be a real looking couch from Macy's, right? That I'll be able to see in my room. And it gives you lots of other benefits too, because this was designed in part to do indoor mapping. The folks at who's the shopping mall company again? I always think it's Valley Fair, but Valley Fair is owned by Westfield.
It's Westfield Australian
Labs. Based.
Aussie, but they own a lot of shopping malls all over the world.
They're
building augmented reality maps so that when you walk in the front door of a mall in the near future, you're going to be able to ask it, hey mall, or hey Westfield, where are all the jeans in this mall? And it'll put four images of jeans, like one's a Guess jeans at, you know, some at Macy's, and one's a Levi's 501 jeans from the Gap, for instance.
And currently, just to explain a little, currently Google has developed a technology called Tango. It's partnered with Lenovo, who has a phone called the Fab 2. I didn't name it. I just wrote about it. But you can go in there, and using a piece of software from a company called IL411, you can ask as you enter the mall where all this stuff is, and then you can follow a blue line trail on a 3D map of the inside of the mall to each place where those blue jeans are located. Very shortly, they will have the celebrity of your choice, whether it's a sexy movie star or a sports hero, can escort you to the places you want. And along the way, that sports hero might say, oh, by the way, this sweater will go very nicely with those jeans, Brett, and you'll look downright dashing.
Yeah. So, and it doesn't end there, right? Because it's going to know your sizes plus or minus a quarter inch, right? Really accurate sizes just by standing in front of a sensor like this. And Apple's rumored to be putting the sensor into a variety of products, from the little TV box to an iPad to an iPhone. And so you're going to walk into a mall like that, and you're going to see the jeans on you, right? So you can see, well, how do they look before you walk across the mall to the Gap to pick up the Levi's 501 jeans, right? And you can spin it around, see how your butt will look in the jeans, right? And on and on. What we are going to do with augmented reality in our world is infinite.
Yeah. So let me talk about specifically your allusion earlier to why Apple's going to be a big player in this space. Because, you know, we saw the 10-year cycle you guys talk about, you know, in 2007, this started with the iPhone. You know, we're just barely 10 years out from that point, and the smartphone has changed the world, undoubtedly, right? So it's very believable that within 10 years, we're seeing the nascent emergence of this technology now, that it could be the game changer in 10 years. That's believable based on what's happened with the smartphone. It could theoretically happen faster. But we need big players like Facebook and Apple and Google and others to play in this space. So what are you hearing about Apple's movements into this
space? I have five sources high up in the consumer electronics industry that says the next iPhone is a major phone, a complete shift from what it's been doing, and it's doing full-blown augmented reality. And Tim Cook has been signaling this to the marketplace for the last, 10 weeks now, that every time he's on a stage or talks to the press, he's talking about augmented reality. And if you understand how Tim Cook works, you know that's a major signaler that a major new product is coming in the next 18 months. And people are telling me that it's coming in September because it's the 10th anniversary of the iPhone. It's the first press conference in their new multi-billion dollar headquarters. And it's coming because they have 600 engineers working on the 3D sensor alone. But these sources have been telling me that it's a clear piece of glass with the batteries and the processor at the bottom in a pack. And that pack is going to start being a design feature of Apple's products going forward. Because when they do show you glasses, and I am hearing separate feedback from sources like these, that Apple is working with Carl Zeiss on a new kind of mixed reality glass that's going to have very little compute and very little battery in the glass. All of that is going to be in your pocket. And as you walk around with this glass, you're going to see new kinds of screens in front of you where you can watch CNN or HBO or play a video game, an old-style video game. It's a virtualized screen. Or you can see new holographic stuff like the HoloLens is showing you. And that's coming in 10 months. And it's coming for a reasonable price, i.e. iPhone-style price. It might be a little bit more because for the clear ones, but I believe all their phones are going to get this Prime Sense sensor because augmented reality is a big deal.
So in October at an Apple event in San Francisco, Tim Cook spoke about this. He said, "I do think the significant portion of the population of developed countries and eventually all countries will have augmented reality experiences every day, almost like eating three meals a day. It will become that much a part of you." So sounds like you're right. Sounds like they're planning something big, and Tim Cook's sounds like he's a believer. Maybe this is what he wants behind Apple instead of Jobs.
All about his legacy. He's been working on this since Steve Jobs died, and I won't be shocked if Apple has video of Tim Cook and Steve Jobs having a conversation about the future of TV, which is what these products are to bring you. Because when you bring augmented reality, you bring a new kind of television to people. A personalized television, a television where the size of the screen is as big as you want it, and can be arranged wherever in the room that you're in, where you want it. I already have five virtual screens on my desk at home, and I'm working in the HoloLens on those screens, like if they were real, but I don't have to have the space for five screens in front of me anymore.
Yeah, I've been, one of the things that I've done is with the Samsung Gear, is, you know, I've enjoyed watching these movies, lying in bed, watching this massive cinematic experience, a virtual screen. And one of the settings you can have with the Gear is you can have you can set yourself up to watch a cinema screen on the moon, on the surface of the moon, which is pretty cool. So, the size of the screen, as you say, isn't restricted.
When you're using the Gear, sort of like watching all this through a screen door?
Now the new screens on the new phones are 4K, so they're actually pretty high resolution. The problem with Gear VR is it's only 3 degrees of freedom. And here's another term we need to define. If you're going to buy VR, real VR is 6 degrees of freedom, i.e. you can move around in a virtual space. And if you come over my house and play, you know, selfie tennis or the climb where you're climbing up a mountain or super hot where you're shooting red zombies or whatever, you need 6 degrees of freedom to play all those things because
right.
you need to be able to move around like you do in the real world. And then, but that's VR. When you go into the mixed reality world is sensing your room and knows where all the surfaces are, i.e. where are your tables, where's your couch, where's your wall. And it's overlaying digital information or imagery on top of those things. So you can have a new kind of chess game on your table. You can have new kinds of TVs around you. You can have new kinds of volumetric actors. You know, Magic Leap showed a video of R2-D2 rolling around the floor, right? Mm. We're going to get magical new kinds of experiences due to these things. And the average consumer has no clue about this. And Apple is going to be able to show you VR and AR and blow you away with a next iPhone.
So
and that's going to be what gets people to buy the next iPhone in massive numbers. I mean, how many iPhones did they sell in the first weekend last year? I think it was around 13 million.
Yeah.
In one weekend, they sell 13 million, right? This one could sell 30 or 40 million or more. Depending on, you know, the packaging and the pricing and all that. But it's going to be a big number. And I think Apple is going to shock the world when they show this thing off to people.
Very, very cool. This is obviously part of a trend where we're just having more and more technology immersed in the world around us, you know, becoming part of these experiences. But how does AI fit into this, guys? Shell, did you want to sort of talk about that?
Or? Excuse me, Robert. Thank you. Everything we're talking about is based on artificial intelligence. It's the soul of the new machine, it's the neural network of it. It's not just the headsets we're talking about. There's a lot of talk. I read an article, I forgot by whom yesterday, that declared that voice-activated devices and software are going to be the next great transformation. And the example being given was the voice of Alexa, which is now an Amazon Echo, and Amazon clearly has plans to put it elsewhere as well. Artificial intelligence allows the science fiction concept of humans and machines integrating together for better or worse, we think for better, by getting to know the user, getting to know your patterns, getting to know your preferences.
Machine learning, essentially.
Anticipating what you need before you actually know yourself that you need it. And so everything that is happening because artificial intelligence is getting better and better in understanding us, at least logically. So far, AI doesn't have a whole lot of common sense, and it can only do the logical conclusions, but maybe that common sense is coming. We've heard of cases where AI is learning to show empathy. It can't feel empathy, but it can act like it is being empathetic. So, yeah, AI is really the soul of the new machines.
Yeah. And there's a bigger thing that's going on in the tech industry, in that this technology is being shared between self-driving cars, robots, drones that can fly and navigate around, and these mixed reality glasses, because they all have a 3D sensor of some kind on them. They're all building a map of the world that they're going to navigate inside, and they're all doing artificial intelligence to figure out what it is that they're looking at. You know, a car needs to know that that's a stop sign and not a yield sign, right? Because it has consequences if it gets that wrong. And artificial intelligence is really good at telling the difference between a stop sign and a yield sign, for instance. And it's not very good at being human. We'll see how human it gets, but we are going to get new kinds of assistants. You're seeing thousands of bots being developed this year that you talk to. Visa showed me a bot where you just talk to it and you ask it for, hey Visa, what's my bank balance, and it shows you a graph of what than what your bank balance looks like right now.
Yeah. Very cool. We had that with Move.
Right? And that's going to happen. These assistants are going to be more, you're going to see these assistants when you use mixed reality glasses, when you walk into McDonald's, when you walk into an airport, when you walk into retail stores, right?
Yeah, very cool. So tell me about, in terms of the software world for this, you know, we have app stores right now. How do you guys imagine this will work with, you know, the next iPhone or, you know, in 2025, you know, that the next generation of mixed reality glasses at, using AI, how's it going to be sort of seamless? I mean, we've seen some interesting predictions in terms of being overwhelmed by all this data in a mixed reality world, but how do you think we'll filter that out to become useful?
Today, when you play with HoloLens, you do a gesture in front of the device. So you open your hand up, and it's called the Bloom gesture. And that gesture gets seen by the computer, the sensor, and then the computer as you want a menu. And when you do that gesture, a menu pops up that lets you go to a store, and you can buy all experiences. You can buy education experiences or architecture experiences, you know, helping you with design, or games like the one I talked to about, you know, the things coming out of the wall. And right now they're singular, and they're not very well mapped to the world that you walk around in. And over the next few years, you're going to see that improve, where you walk into a shopping mall and that causes the shopping mall app to come up as an offer, and then you click on it with your finger and now it's helping you do shopping and seeing the other services that are available at that place. But we're a ways off from that, maybe a couple of years. The first ones are going to be menus, you know, going to be stores like the iPhone store where you buy apps for your iPhone.
Brett, I'm going to have to jump off right now.
No, that's
now.
Fine. No, we
10 o'clock.
That's good. We're good. So let's just wrap this up, shall? Just do a quick close on the comments. So,
okay.
So, shall tell me, you know, and Robert, where can we find out more information about your book, The Fourth Transformation, and where will you guys be next doing a reading or appearance associated with the book?
Well, you can find us on Amazon.com in paper, in Kindle, and Audible form. You can contact me, Shel Israel, message me on Facebook if you're interested in a site license for the book or a personalized autographed copy by Robert and me. We will be all over the place at CES in a couple of weeks, and we have a big party on December 30th in San Francisco at Upload VR that Robert can tell you about.
All right, so this show will air just after December 30th, the first week of Jan. So. So that was a great party.
That big party.
Well, we're doing a separate party at CES in the Palms on Friday night if you're at CES, but most of your audience probably doesn't go to the Consumer Electronic Show. But we'll be doing a variety of book readings and things in the first quarter of next year. So just follow us on Facebook because we'll put it all on Facebook.
Fantastic.
Yeah, also we will have a site going up in January. You can go to shellisrael.com and see the schedule of appearances now. But that'll all be migrating to our new transformation group website in January.
Yes, and if you type in thefourthtransformation.com, you'll also get to Shell's website. So, well, yep. Robert Scoble and Shel Israel, thank you very much for joining us on Breaking Banks again this week, and continued success with what is undoubtedly going to be one of the big bestsellers this year, The Fourth Transformation, and thanks again for coming on the show.
Thanks a lot, Brett. It was a pleasure being on.
Yeah, thanks. And it's going to be a fun year for the tech industry. I've never seen a fight amongst huge companies this
for dominance, yeah,
with this kind of level of spend, this kind of investment. Hundreds of billions of dollars are on the line for this.
Very exciting.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun year. Thanks for having us on.
Thanks, Robert. And speak to you soon. See you at CES. So that's the wrap-up for the show. A great interview with Robert and Shel. Really mind-blowing stuff. And it'd be really interesting to look for that new iPhone next year and
well, 2017, it's this year already, look for the new iPhone and see what that's going to do in terms of the mixed reality stuff. But don't forget, guys, please follow the show on Twitter. Our Twitter ID is at BreakingBanks1 and on Facebook at BreakingBanksRadio. Now, stop what you're doing. And if you like this show, I need you to do something. Go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review, please. It really helps more people find the show and would be much appreciated. And also, make sure you subscribe to our host, Sam Moore's own podcast, The FinTech 5, which you can find at fintech5.com or iTunes or anywhere that you listen to podcasts for that matter. Just search on FinTech 5. And also, don't forget to check out Dave Birch's Tomorrow's Transactions podcast. But thanks again for being with us on the Breaking Bank Show. We wish you all a great 2017. Thanks for making 2016 huge for us. And I'm Brett King, your host. I'll see you again next week.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, for more of the latest in fintech news.